Mr. Charles Seibert, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Seibert?
The 11th of August 1921. I was born at 41 Chester Building in Loman Grove, Campbell. A flat, small flat, in the front room.
And what did your father do for a living? And can tell us
my
a bit
father, most of my childhood, was unemployed. He was originally, he had been, I believe, quite a remarkable tenor voice, but he, for some reason, either his voice failed. And I also believe that he'd been quite an accomplished violinist. But he broke his elbow, and that finished his career in that respect. And he was working in the theatre line in the business, and but of course during the interwar years, it was conditions were very bad, and most of my childhood he was unemployed.
Were there any other children in the family?
Yes, I was the youngest of five. My three sisters.
How did the family cope? I mean, was it hard?
Oh, it was very hard, yes. Very hard indeed. But it was very hard for everyone then, or nearly everybody. People that had work were fortunate. But
did your mother work?
Sometimes she had workers cleaning, and she did take children in, teach them music, the piano, local children. If I remember rightly, she charged sixpence an hour.
And what school did you go to?
Oh, I went to St Joseph's Catholic School in Pitman Street, Campbell.
And what kind of education did you get there?
Oh, very elementary. I think I was 13 when I left school.
So just the 3 hours?
Hmm?
The 3 hours?
The 3 hours, yes, and of course the main emphasis was on religion, Catholic. You know, most of the time seemed to be spent in going to church.
Were you religious then?
Hmm?
Were you religious?
Up until I was 14, but I've never willingly been to church since the day I left school.
And what about any particular subject interest you, or was it just this grinding religion?
It was, I think that looked as probably the day that there were a few very bright children who the teachers would give special attention to. The rest of the children just soldiered along. I don't think they realised what was happening.
So you didn't have a favourite subject or anything?
No, that's not altogether true. I used to love geography and reading. I used to read a great deal. I used to, after school, go back and straight to the library and take out a couple of books and read them that night. And the fact that the library again the following night.
Were you interested?
There was none of the entertainment that children have now. It was either playing games with the local children or your own sisters and brothers, and or reading.
Well, but no sport then?
We did go to, I think, to football about once a week from the school. We used to walk from the school to Ruskin Park. Couple of miles away, I suppose.
What about outside of school? Any boys, were you a member of any of the boys' things?
Yes, quite a lot of boys. We had, in the tenements where we lived, there was a square dividing in between the two blocks of flats, and of course that was the playground for all the children.
But any,
had great fun there.
But any organised boys' clubs? Or
no.
Scouting or anything?
No, I didn't belong to any organised clubs. I think mainly because the all the children in that area, particular area where I lived, were CFE, and of course as my own school, we were not encouraged to belong to any other groups.
Now, you left school at 13, that'd be about...
I left school in about July, I think, or into August, and of course I was just on 14 when I left there.
So that'd be about 1934.
35.
Five, yeah. Mm. And what was it planned for you to do, or were there any
nothing.
Plans?
Nothing. I remember before we left, a month or so before we left, there was somebody came round from the local education board or whatever it might have been, a chap that had a plum job, and all the children were lined up outside the classroom, and we all filed in one by one, and he asked us what we wanted to do, what we wanted to work at when we left school. And when I went there, I thought, well, what can I say? All the other children, they all wanted to go in what they termed the print. That was some fabulous job where people earned a lot of money. So I thought, well, I don't want to go into print like everybody else. I'll say something different. I thought, well, I said, I want to be a plumber. And he said, and a very good choice too, my boy. And that was it. Now, in retrospect, I thought myself, I'd like a job like yours.
So what did you do when you left school?
I went into a foundry. Biggest mistake. Well, it was even for a 14-year-old boy then. It was difficult to find work.
Which foundry was that?
Oh, it was called the Hanger Webster in George Street. I'm not quite sure if that was in Deptford or not.
And what was the foundry making?
It was what they called a non-ferrous foundry. That was ferrous being iron and non-ferrous being all the other metals, brass and aluminium, phosphor, bronze, all those things.
So what was it making? Pots and pans or bedsteads?
No, a lot of the work was for Siemens, and they would be the for connecting the cables. Sometimes they'd fake a few antiques, used to cast some vases and things like that, and soak them in acid and then leave them in sand for a few weeks, and they come out beautifully green. But it was just a general job in the foundry.
And what were you doing? I mean, were you actually work, or were you just a sort of factory?
Yes, I was basically labouring, and then went into what they termed core making, which was the cores for the castings.
And did you stay there right through to 39, or?
Oh, no, it was a grind, really hard work, and. Also a very unhealthy job because of the fumes. So when they were cast, then you couldn't see across the foundry. And so I thought, well, I'll find something different. And I got after a couple of, or a year, I should think, perhaps, I left there. I had secured another job first, and went to work in Walworth Road in an engineering plant.
That'd be about 37?
Probably late 36 or early 37. That was people from Carling. It was funny enough, the works was beneath the buildings in a firm off road off Walworth Road. And
what was that engine?
That was another foundry, that's right. That was another foundry. And the engineering works was next to it, where I was working in there from time to time. They were connected in some way, I don't know exactly.
So you were back in another foundry?
Yes, right, yeah.
Same sort of job?
Oh, well, that's right, because I couldn't get a file in a week, a file in an hour rise. With hand at Webster. And I was getting a few shillings more a week. I think it was ten shillings a week at hand at Webster, and I think I managed to get 14 shillings a week at the Harling Foundry.
Same kind of work?
Same kind of work.
How long were you there for?
About, must have been getting on towards late 37 then, so I decided to go out of the trade altogether and get a job in the milliners making hats.
That's a big change.
That was a big change, yes. But even so, it was surprising how it was these felts for women's hats, making the basic felt, and they had to be pulled across a block which shaped the hat, and they were steamed first. And of course, when you got them, they were absolutely steaming hot. You were pulling these felts across this aluminium block, and you would have no skin left on your fingers. They're permanently sore, open with these bandages around them.
And wasn't that a skilled trade? Wouldn't you have an apprentice to it?
No. At that time, apprentice usually had to pay something to take on the trade. It might be a small amount, or I do know cases as much as £100. Or £100 is a fortune. By 1939, you could buy a house for £350, £400, and the talk of £100. Usually, I think they pay somewhere in the region of about £5 or £6, something like that.
So this was just a job, and you were on the felt machines, pulling them off the felt.
So anyway, I left there after. I must have been getting on to about 1938 then, and I went into a job in the Imperial Tobacco Company, which again was pretty paid well for that time.
And what were you doing for them?
I was working in the press room, which again was very hard work indeed. And then the war started.
Now, during the 1930s, you were only a young lad, 14 up to about 18, 19. Were you aware of what was going on in Germany?
Oh, yes. I think most people were. I don't know about people of my age or youngsters of my age, but at that time there was quite a lot of political discussion, both at home and I should sit and read the newspapers during the lunchtime, and everybody was aware of what was going on. But of course, it was the same then as it is today, that you get people that seem to be oblivious to the politics and what is happening around them. Not only youngsters, but adults.
But you were aware.
Yes.
You saw Hitler as a threat?
Oh, yes.
Did you think it would involve you, or did you think it would all come?
Well, I think everybody at that time realised that war was inevitable.
Did you think of joining the territorials or anything?
No. I think mostly because in the early years, by the time I finished work, I was too tired to do anything.
So
you had a long working day. The normal hours were 8 to 6 or something like that, and we used to walk to work and walk back. So by the time you had your day's work and whatnot, by the time you'd finish, you were completely exhausted. Well, at least I was.
Now, you just turned 18 then. in August, that 39. What do you remember of the day war broke out? It's a bit of a cliche, but did you hear the radio broadcast or anything?
Yes, I heard the radio broadcast, and then within about a minute or so afterwards, the air raid sirens sounded, which was a false alarm.
Had there been any?
I listened to Sir Tankerton's announcing that I think he said, and consequently, we are now at war with Germany.
How did you feel?
I didn't feel anything, but being young, you knew it was going to happen, but I can't say. You see, I'd grown up in the aftermath of the Great War, and the horror of it was still around then as I grew up as a child. You would see these soldiers begging, and sometimes they would have paintings that were on the street corners and that. I can always remember an alley I used to walk through where there was a chap sitting, had a paper leg after pushing me, and he had pictures there, paintings there, and I can always remember one was a loaf of bread. I mean, right under a chalk underneath it, easy to draw, but hard to get.
And had your father served in the First World War?
The father, he had one eye as well, lost an eye. And I think he went into, he sometimes referred to the Princess Louise of Kensington, but he couldn't have, I think he couldn't have served at all. Had been rejected, he couldn't have been fit.
So, what happened next? How did the declaration of war affect your life? I mean, what?
Oh yes, particular branch of the field of that was the different forces, the Admiral Carter, and were quite near to your place, and they evacuated. They shut the plant down and moved to Chester, and I went with them. So I think I was about 18.
So a bit of a wrench?
Hmm?
Bit of a
Well, until then, I don't suppose I've been out of London in RBL. When we were at school, we used to get, once a year, we get a day trip to Epsom where we days running away from people that were going to kidnap you or something. Well, yes, we used to go there and swept them down once a year, and it was quite a trip. When we get to the Downs and the small boys of that, we've always told that there were gypsies kidnapping boys, so we'd always be running in different directions.
So how did you settle in Chester?
Oh, well, oh yes, the commercial hotel in City Road, Chester. Never been back there, and I can I used to walk round the walls every night, and that was my sort of daily or nightly evening walk, go round the walls, and used to call in. It was, of course, it was all blacked out, and used to finish up by going down a little tiny, the Rose, they called an area that they called the Rose, and used to walk around that and down a little tiny alleyway somewhere to the Boot Inn, and used to sit there and have a pint in the Ingle Nook.
And you were still just basically labouring them?
Yes. Mm.
And how long were you there?
Till I went into the army, I was called up from there.
Now, when did you get your call-up papers? Roughly.
10th of April 1941. I did quite well when I went in, because I'd joined the LDV when they first formed.
Oh, well, let's talk about that first. Then. The local defence volunteers, later the Home Guard, they were formed just around the time of Dunkirk, were they?
Yes. I issued an appeal, and the first day I joined them.
What do you remember of those, the first time? I mean, because it was a very new organisation, wasn't it? I mean, what was it? Where did you have to go, and what happened?
We went to Chester Castle. Went to Chester Castle, where they were enrolling people. And
were there many there?
We had a battalion, if I remember rightly. And I can't remember the names of the people now, but the officers and sergeants were, of course, from the First World War. And for the first weeks, well, it could have been months, after so long ago now, I've forgotten, but I should think for the first couple of months, we had the squad I was with, or the platoon I was with, we had one shotgun between us, and I think there were five cartridges which had ball in them. They'd taken out the pellets and put ball in them. And that's what we had for the first period, until the Americans, a shipload of rifles came over from America, and we were all issued with rifles. I, for some reason or other, had a Browning automatic rifle, 20-shot automatic rifle. So I was quite distinctive from the others because they'd never got rifles, and I'd got this long automatic rifle I had to carry over my shoulder.
Now, what about when you first started? What was your platoon? Where do you meet? Was it at Chester Castle, all of you? Or?
Yes. Once we had the positions, we were allocated positions to guard. Ours was mostly the Grosvenor Bridge in Chester, over the River Dee. And they had a small hut underneath the bridge, and we used to assemble there, meet there virtually every night, and then go to work the next day, spend all night on guard, and work all the next day.
Sounds hard.
The
what was the battalion called? Did it have a number or name?
I've got it here somewhere because it's there's a letter here somewhere or a note from the whoever was the officer, thanking me for the service, etc. I think it was the 1st Battalion, Czechia. Because we were issued with the Czechia and badges, which I've still got.
Cheshire Regiment.
Cheshire Regiment,
yeah. So 1st Battalion, Cheshire Regiment, Home Guard, something like that.
Yeah.
We can perhaps look that up later and drop it in.
I've got the papers here somewhere.
And what sort of training did you get with them?
The basic rifle drill, and that was all. And in my case, I had this Browning.
Did you actually get any chance to any weapons training, or was it just drill?
Drill. And I think there was, you were taught the basics of looking ferocious and shouting. That was all.
You didn't get a chance to fire the Browning?
Yes. When they eventually had ammo, I did fire it, yes.
So you got the Browning before you got the ammunition for it?
No, I think they came together, but of course the ammo was very limited supply.
What was it like to fire?
Very good. Very good. I don't know if you've ever seen one, have you? No, they were American 20-shot automatic rifles, more or less. I think there was, I suppose, a larger scale version of the eventual rifles, a Garand rifle, wasn't it? But of course, the Garand had a small magazine, but these were First World War guns.
And so you had the training would be at the Chester Castle?
Yes.
And pretty well drill and bit of bayonet
yes,
show?
Yes, we did parade in Chester Castle to be inspected by some leather boots, black leather boots, and I can always remember the tune they played. I don't know the name of it though.
And what was your opinion of the quality of the personnel? I mean, how effective a fighting unit would it make? What was the balance of ages and
Well, the majority of the attacks were older men, first of all, more men. And I know I remember somebody firing or accidentally firing a rifle in the hut. And most, I mean, to me, it was such a surprise that I didn't react. But most of the older men spent there and seemed to be trying to clamber up the wall of the hut in the corners. But it became quite commonplace later on for people firing, accidentally firing guns.
Went in later on in the army?
Yes.
And did the veterans, did they tell you much about what it was like?
No. I never remember any of them really speaking about it.
That they'd be in their 40s, I presume, 40-ish.
I remember one chap was 41, which to me, of course, at that time, he was an old man.
And did you look up to them, or did you think they were past it?
No, I can't say that I looked up and really didn't think about it.
Were there many young ones like you? I mean, most of them were old.
No. They, as I say, the majority of them were older men.
Did you go out on tactical exercises at all?
Only once or twice. So it was not like the Federal Army. Most of our time was spent on guard. Virtually every night we were out on guard.
What were you looking for?
Anything suspicious, but I suppose at that time I was too young and naive to really know what was suspicious and what wasn't. Oh, we used to go out. There had been some what was minor damage, bomb damage in Chester, compared to what other towns had. It was only minor, but a few houses were destroyed. I think they pulled them down in haste to create an impression. They could have been repaired. They were beautiful old medieval buildings or houses, but. We did go out on patrols with orders to shoot on sight any looters. And one of the common patrols, type of patrolling, was for somebody to be hiding somewhere. Well, another chap was out in the open, and he would be guarding the guard. But I don't think anybody at that time was expecting the invasion. But as I say, we were too young and naive to really know what to expect.
Were there any incidents while you were on guard?
No.
I mean, would there just be one on the? How many would there be on the guard in the hut and?
Oh, probably about 10 or 12 people.
And a couple out on the actual bridge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that gave you some, that was your first experience. I forgot to ask, a uniform, did you get your uniform?
Oh, we were, after a few weeks, were issued with denims, which we had.
Did you ever get a full khaki uniform?
No, not in the